It's not hit with a racket. It's not hit with a club. It's hit with a...
It is hit with a club.
I'm sorry. It's, let me cut, edit. Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Up and Dead Inglés con Reza y Craig. Hello, Reza.
Hiya, Craig. How are things?
Things are good. Things are very, very well, thank you. Hey, did you enjoy the last episode with Becky and Melissa?
Great fun.
Wasn't it fun? Wasn't it good? Weren't they lovely girls?
Lovely. Brilliant fun. I knew Becky, of course, but I hadn't met Melissa before. Really nice girl.
Yeah, she was great. And we also have another special episode coming up soon with your friend and my friend Mel, who's coming down to visit from the north of Spain.
That's right. Let's not give too much away. Let's just say she'll be in Valencia on holiday, and so we'll pick her brains.
Yeah, we're going to have her on the show. And the reason we record these interviews and special episodes is to give you practice and revision of grammar, vocabulary, phrasal verbs, etc., that we practice in these episodes. So it gives you a chance to revise some grammar and vocabulary, and also to improve your listening and your comprehension.
I think a lot of interesting vocabulary came up in the interviews. Perhaps because Melissa comes from New York, she uses different expressions, different vocabulary.
Yes.
Compared to British English. I don't know if the listeners appreciate that, but there are little differences.
No, it's good to hear an American accent, especially an original New York accent. Anyway, we have some feedback, Reza, from one or two people that I'd like to mention. Julia from Las Palmas says, I love so much this podcast. A problem there with word order, isn't it?
We mentioned that before, didn't we?
Something similar. We did, Julia.
Oh, it was very much. Yeah. I like very much.
Yeah.
And I like so much. You put it at the end, don't you?
So it should be, I love this podcast so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Or very much. It's funny, and I do grammar falls.
What?
I do grammar falls. Two mistakes there.
I do grammar what?
Falls. F-A-L-L-S. What do you think she means?
I'm not quite sure. What do you think she means?
I think she means faltas. I think she means mistakes.
Oh, okay.
No?
So, aha, que ella comete fallos.
Fallos.
Isn't that it?
Yeah, it's
tiene
probably...
fallos. Commit errores.
It's probably fallos. So, that's one problem. Mistakes.
She makes mistakes.
And she makes, not she does. So the collocation with mistake is make. Make a mistake.
There's an episode, Craig. Oh, I can't remember what number now. From a long time ago, we did make and do. Do you remember?
We did. And I will put a link, un enlace, in the show notes. Las notas de episodios at inglespodcast.com. So go there and you will see a link, enlace to the episode of make and do collocations. But anyway, Julia continues to say, I like your jokes in the podcast and bye for now. Thanks. Thank you, Julia.
Thanks, Julia.
Second piece of feedback. Hi, my name is Hugo and I'm from Santa Fe City in Argentina. Your posts are very, very wonderful. I enjoy they. What do you think?
I enjoy them.
Well, actually, Hugo says, I enjoy they listening in my car.
Oh, right. More complicated. What would you say for that?
I would say, I enjoy listening to them in my car. So remember the preposition after listening. It's usually listening to music, listening to podcasts, and them. So listening to them in my car. Ellos.
And that's quite strange, perhaps, for Spanish speakers, because listening, it's ing form.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy listening to them. And that's because when you have a verb used as a subject or object,
mm-hmm.
in other words, like a noun, say, como un sustantivo, como si fuera un sustantivo, in English it's ing.
That's
whereas
right.
In Spanish it tends to be infinitive. But I tell you what, we could talk about that in more detail in another episode.
That's a good idea.
That's a whole other topic, isn't it?
I'll make a note and we can speak about that another episode. So Hugo says, I enjoy listening to them in my car when I'm driving. Thanks so much. Well, thank you, Hugo, for writing to us. The next piece of feedback, Rafael says, muchas gracias por estos podcasts. Estaba buscando algo parecido para recordar un poco mi inglés, que lo tenía muy olvidado. And then he says, hay de esforzarme un poco más porque no estoy habituado al acento americano.
Sorry, what does he mean by... Is he referring to the one with Melissa?
No, because it hasn't been published yet. He thinks we have American accents.
Oh.
Which we don't. I have a South England accent.
Okay.
From London. You have a Belfast accent.
Mm. Might be me. Because, you know, an accent from Belfast, from Northern Ireland, to some people it can sound a little bit American. Not American, but I think there are things in common with an American accent.
I think you sound pretty American there, cowboy.
Yeah, you think so?
I think so. Anyway, Rafael continues, bueno, no estoy seguro del origen del acento. Entonces, ya sabes. Pero merece la pena el esfuerzo. Gracias. Thank you, Rafael. And finally, Karina from Argentina. Hola, buenos días. Muchas gracias por los audios. Yo soy de Argentina y estoy estudiando inglés y sus audios me están ayudando muchísimo. Y aprendo con cada uno de ellos.
Oh, buena noticia.
Yes. Este audio es uno de mis favoritos. Thank you. Y quiero preguntarles si puedo escuchar a su invitada Bea en algún otro sitio porque me gustaría escucharla y seguir aprendiendo. Muchas gracias por ayudarme a entender y aprender su hermoso idioma. Saludos desde Argentina, Karina. Thank you, Karina. Well, you can watch an interview that I did with Bea, a video interview on YouTube. It's Coffee with Craig, so you have to search YouTube for Coffee with Craig, that's me, C-R-A-I-G, or search for our channel, which is La Mención del Inglés on YouTube, and you will see my interview with Bea in YouTube. And we hope to have Bea back on the podcast in the future. She did say that she wants to do more podcasts with us, so I hope that we'll have her back on soon.
Yes, let's have Bea back because I want to continue our hot debate on biscuits.
Yes, one of your favourite subjects.
She didn't like fig rolls and I'm determined to convince her that they're nice.
Okay, well, we'll do that in the future. Moving on to Grammatica. If you remember, listeners, in episode 24, we spoke about may and might, the modal verbs. And this week, we're going to look at must and have to. Aren't we, Reza?
Yep. I guess we have to.
I guess we have to, so let's do it.
Because people don't understand them. Tenemos que hacerlo. We have to.
You must explain.
Okay. So, have to, must. Are they the same? Are they different? More or less the same. More or less. I'm not going to say 100%, but more or less. More or less. They're both used, well, they're used for various reasons, like all modals. But today I thought we'd just talk about obligation. Have to and must for obligation.
Obligación.
Okay. So, let me ask you a few questions, Craig, if you don't mind.
Fire away.
What time do you have to get up tomorrow?
What day is it today?
Today's Tuesday.
Wednesday. Tomorrow I'm examining in the British Council, so I will have to get up fairly early for me, which will be about 7:15, half past seven.
Yeah. Okay. So Craig said that he will have to get up at about half past seven?
That's right.
He'll have to get up. Tendrá que levantarse a las 7:30. Tendrá que. So have to, tener que. It's an obligation.
I can't say I will, must get up, can I?
No, you can't. That's why I didn't use must there. We'll talk about must in a minute.
I'm jumping the gun.
Jumping the gun. That's one that we can put that in our idioms coming up later.
To jump the gun.
To jump is saltarse, no? Saltarse.
See.
Okay, Craig, another question for you. It's coming up to the end of term. Have you got to correct many exams?
Have I got to correct many exams? No, I don't. I have corrected.
You're lucky.
I've got to correct some writing because my students are writing for the Cambridge FCE exam. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to correct writing next week.
Okay. So Craig doesn't have to correct many exams, but he has got to correct a few exams. Now, I don't know if any of the more observant listeners noticed there that I asked Craig, have you got to correct exams? I could have said, do you have to correct exams? Because the meaning's the same. You should know already, hopefully, that the verb have in English has two forms. You can say, you can use the regular form. For example, what time do you have to get up tomorrow? Do you have to get up? So I use the auxiliary to. Or there's the irregular form of have, which is very common as well. Have you got to correct exams? Or even, what time have you got to get up? You can have a version of have with no auxiliary do, but we put have in the place of the auxiliary and we add the word got.
So got is the verb.
Well, really the verb is have, but got appears to be the verb, yeah.
I've got to. That's more British English, isn't it? An American probably wouldn't use that.
Maybe not as much, yeah. But I would say more than anything, if you say, have you got to correct exams, rather than do you have you got more informal.
Yeah.
More
informal. And more in spoken English, perhaps, than written English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You say Americans wouldn't say God. I don't know. I think they would. For example, I think it's very American to say I gotta go.
Yeah, right.
I gotta go.
You're right.
Which means I have to go or I have got to go. But very often people just shorten it to I gotta go, mm-hmm. and they forget about have, which really grammatically isn't correct, but we do it.
And the pronunciation wouldn't be got to, it would be gotta.
Gotta.
I gotta go.
I gotta go.
Hey man, I gotta go. Yeah.
But in British English as well, we'd do it with our own pronunciation. I gotta go.
I gotta go. Yeah.
But it's particularly American, isn't it?
Yes.
So, have to can be the regular form or the irregular form, with whether auxiliary do or does, etc., or no auxiliary. Here's another question for you, Craig. Craig, must we always mention Mickey Mouse in every episode?
I think it's become a tradition, so I think we must.
We must there. I could have said, Craig...
That sounds very formal. Must we do that? Must we do this?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds quite formal.
You could consider it formal, or what about if I changed my intonation a little bit, Craig, and I said, Craig, must we always mention Mickey Mouse in every episode?
That sounds very emphatic. More emphatical.
Yeah. And maybe I'm sounding a little bit perhaps tired of it, or perhaps a bit annoyed. For imagine, Craig, for example, someone is making a loud noise beside me and I need to concentrate. And I say, must you make that noise?
Must you keep on doing that?
Yeah. Can you not be quiet? So must and have to are similar for obligation, but must has some special uses when it's better than have to. For example, if something annoys you or you have a wish. For example, if I said to you, I really must stop smoking. It's killing me. I really must stop. I could say I really have to, but it's better to say I really must stop smoking. Realmente tengo que dejar de fumar.
That's the internal obligation, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's something I really wish I could do. It's quite personal. It's a wish. So must there is better than have to. Although have to is not completely wrong. They're very similar. But, for example, have to would be better in this sentence. She's going to live in the UK, so she will have to learn to drive on the left of the road.
Right.
In the UK, we drive on the left. In Reino Unido, conducimos por la izquierda. So she will have to learn to drive on the left in the UK. Tendrá que aprender conducir por la izquierda.
Mm-hmm.
Have to there is better because it's not personal, it's not a wish, it's the law. Everybody has to drive on the left in the UK. So have to is better for things which are more universal. You're obliged to do it because of a law, because it's an imposition on you. Whereas must is better for personal things or something you internalize, as you said, Craig, or something that you really wish would or wouldn't happen. Like, must you make that noise? You know, obviously I wish you wouldn't. Must you? You know, I want you to stop. So they're very, very similar and they're often interchangeable, but sometimes one is better than the other. Now, we haven't really mentioned the grammar of must. Well, not that much to mention, really.
Before you do that, can I add something? Mm-hmm. In many course books and many teachers, when they teach obligation and use must and have to, they teach it as a very, very strong obligation. The government say you must or you have to pay your taxes, or you must or you have to drive on the left or on the right, or something very serious and very, very mm-hmm. big.
Right.
But I want to emphasize that it really depends on how you feel inside sometimes, because if you're coming here mm-hmm. to record the podcast, and I know you like tea, mm-hmm. and I open the fridge and there's no milk, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, Reza's coming. He likes his tea. He likes milk. I must get some milk. So it's not a very serious, very heavy form of obligation, but I feel it's very important, so I'd use must or yeah. have to. Do you agree with that?
Totally. It's really more to do with the speaker or the writer.
Right.
You know? If it's very important for you, then you might use have to or must.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not so important, you could have used another word like should
or had example. Better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about in another episode, should and had better.
So you're going to explain the grammar of must.
Yeah, so we already talked about have to. It has the regular form, do you have to get up early? Or the irregular form, have you got to get up early? Okay, we know that. Now, must is a modal verb. We've mentioned that modal verbs are a bit strange. There's no auxiliary ever with must.
No, you can't say do must or have must.
Just use must in the place of the auxiliary, for example. Must you smoke in here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can't you go outside? Tienes que fumar aquí. No puedes salir. Must you smoke? Not do you must? Uh-uh. Must you smoke? No auxiliary. And to make it negative, must not, you can put them together, and we usually do when we speak and say mustn't.
Mustn't.
Contraction. For example, you mustn't eat in here. It's prohibited.
Mm-hmm. You mustn't smoke in bed. It's dangerous.
Yes. So, no hay que fumar en la cama. O tienes prohibido fumar en la cama. Es peligroso.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the grammatical structure of must. It's a modal, so no auxiliaries.
And also no infinitive with to, which is a common mistake for Spanish speakers. I've heard students say, I must to go and buy bread. I must to get my driving license. I must to renew my passport. There's no to.
No.
Never after full modal verbs.
No. Must followed by the base form. That
yes.
means the verb without to. Whereas have to is followed by to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about using them in the past?
Must,
Craig,
must,
what's must the past of... If you want to talk about obligation,
yeah.
specifically obligation... for example, like you have to do your homework. You must do your homework, says the teacher. Tienes que hacer los deberes, dice el profesor. What's the past of must?
Had to.
Right. I couldn't fool Craig there, listeners. There is no past form of must.
You can't say musted.
No.
It doesn't exist.
You just have to use the past of have to, which is had. So that brings me right back to the beginning when I said they're more or less the same. I talked about little differences, subtle differences, diferencias sutiles, but there is no past form of must, so there's no other choice but to use had to, so you can see that they're pretty much the same.
And there's no future either.
There's no future either.
Of must. We'll have to.
Yep.
I'll have to go. I'll have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Like, imagine I said, oh, I really must stop smoking. It's going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to talk about it in the past, I would say, Reza said that he really had to stop smoking. I can't, as you say, there's no mustard, so I have to change it. I have to change it. Sorry about that.
I had to.
And if it was future, I will really have to stop smoking very soon. Tendré que dejar de fumar muy pronto. I cannot say will, must.
Correct.
Well, that's really about all I can think of to say for now about have to and must as regards obligation. But listeners, you'll be hearing more about have to and must and should and could and other modals in the future because they have many uses. We've been talking about obligation.
Right, and I think you covered it very well.
Now, Craig, you really must tell us about some interesting vocabulary.
I will do that. So, moving on to Vocabulary Corner, and this week's sport. You may remember, listeners, that in episode 17, we spoke about some sport verbs. For example, play, to play a game or play an opponent, play a team, and to beat someone, beat a record. We spoke about winning a game, win a competition, score, take part in. So go back to episode 17 if you need some revision. But this week I'd like to speak about some general vocabulary. Reza, do you like sport? Are you a sporty person?
I must confess I'm not, but I really admire people who are. I wish I were sporty. Ojalá yo fuera más deportista.
Is there any sport that you maybe watch or TV or have even a slight interest in? For example, the World Cup is starting soon in Brazil.
Like many people around the world, although I'm not a huge football fan, no soy fan muy, muy a lo grande, no soy, but I like the World Cup. I love that. So many people do.
And Spain are playing on Friday. Maybe we can go together and have a beer and watch Spain play.
Watch La Roja. I'd like that. Yeah.
Okay, it's a date.
I'm sorry, Craig, probably you don't agree with me, but I would like Spain to win the World Cup.
So would I. So
really?
Would I. I'd like England to win.
Ah, I see. That's why I said it. Spain or England. For me, Spain, I'm sorry to say.
Really?
Well, I'm not English, am I? I may be from the UK, but I'm not English. I'd rather have Spain.
Okay.
See, I thought you wouldn't agree, you see. Well, if it was Ireland, that would be different.
So if it's a Spain-England final,
Spain.
We could be at each other's throats.
I will be hoping Spain wins. Sorry about that.
Okay. So thinking of football, staying on the sport of football, let's look at some words connected with football. Reza, what's the judge in football, the man in black who decides who imposes the rules in football?
Well, the man or woman could be in charge is the referee.
That's right, the referee.
But there are two others.
Two on the line, the side lines.
The linesmen.
The
linesmen
or lineswomen.
The ones who run up and down along the side.
With a flag.
With a flag. And what do they decide mainly?
They decide when the ball goes out of play, when it crosses the line. They help the referee with fouls. Faltas. F-O-U-L-S.
Yeah.
And the offside. Trap the offside. I don't know
fuera
what offside.
Fuera de juego.
When,
is that it?
Well, fuera de juego is when it goes out of the line. I think offside is when there's
offside, which is what we're accorded to, and what I'm going to be right. Offside, which is fuera de juego.
Okay.
Offside, which is fuera de fuego. Might be that.
Okay, I'll check it.
We better check that.
Yeah. And what's the verb that we use when the ball goes into the back of the net? La red.
A goal.
A goal. And the verb?
To score a goal.
To score. To score a goal. And where is football played in Ireland?
In Ireland or in anywhere, it's played on a football pitch.
I thought you might have a different word. Football pitch. Would you say football field?
I've heard people say that only if it's not really a proper pitch or not a very good one.
You mean not maybe in a stadium?
Yeah, to be colloquial, people do say that, but really pitch is a better word, isn't it?
I would say pitch. So football pitch is inside a football stadium. When a player fouls another player, then if it's bad, the referee does what?
he will give him a card.
What color?
Could be yellow or it could be red.
First one's yellow, second one's red. So
what? No. Oh, no. Wait, it's
whoa,
not
whoa,
always.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold your horses.
Hold your horses. An idiom. Good idiom. Hold your horses. Espérate, espérate.
Espérate. Hold your horses.
Yes, the first one's yellow and the second one's red.
Usually.
If he wants to give you one, but you can get a red directly.
If it's very bad.
Yeah, you can go straight to the red without the yellow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the correct expression would possibly be to show someone the red card. If you show a player the red card, then... You, oh, there's another expression, to book, B-O-B-O-O-K.
That's to give them yellow, specifically.
To book a player is to give them yellow, correct.
Because the referee writes the name and the number in his book.
Correct.
So he's got a record of who has a card.
That's right. And if he shows two yellow cards, it's automatically a red card, and he sends the player off. So the phrasal verb to send off a player is, what is it? Quitarlo del juego. Mandarlo.
Mandarlo fuera.
You say in English, mandarlo a la ducha, to have an early shower.
Yes, that's right.
Send them for an early shower.
That's right.
Okay. Moving on to tennis. Where is tennis played?
Tennis court.
That's right. Tennis court.
And other things played in a court?
Badminton.
Yeah. Volleyball.
Squash.
Ooh,
basketball.
Basketball. There's another one, but I can't remember now what I was going to say. No, all right.
Okay.
Squash, did we say squash? No, you said it.
I said squash.
Right.
But in tennis, the judge is not called a referee, is he? Or
no.
Her?
An umpire.
That's right, an umpire. Which other sports have umpires?
Well, one of my favourite sports, cricket.
Mm-hmm.
What else has
that's
umpire?
All. That's all I can think of. Cricket and tennis. Maybe there's another one.
In American baseball, do they say umpire? I think they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
We'll have to ask Melissa.
Let's check that.
Can't remember.
I think it's an umpire in American baseball.
Maybe. Yeah. When you hit the ball with a racket, not a bat, because we, as we said in episode 17, rackets usually have strings.
That's right.
Bats are just wood, like table tennis bat, baseball bat,
cricket bat.
So when you hit the ball for the first time in tennis, you serve the ball, servir.
Yeah. You say in English? Or badminton, or table
badminton.
Tennis.
Correct. So to put the ball into play, empezar, you serve the ball.
Poner el balón en juego, put the ball into play, that's a good expression.
Another interesting piece of vocabulary for tennis and football. When the score at the end of the game in football is zero, we say...
In football, nil.
Nil, so it's 1-0.
N-I-L, nil.
1-0.
Yes.
But in tennis?
Love.
Correct.
Isn't
love.
That strange?
So 15 love... 30 love. Love is zero in tennis. L-O-V-E.
And in tennis, when they both have what would be 40 points, what do we say for that?
40 points each?
Yeah.
My mind's gone blank.
Isn't it juice?
Juice. Juice.
That's not orange juice. That's D-E-U-C-E juice.
Juice.
Meaning both have the same score.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after juice... You don't go directly to 50, then you have to get advantage.
Advantage.
And then you go to 50 and win.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's
after
right.
After juice.
That's
why you'll hear them say in English, juice, and then, for example, after that, advantage Nadal. So that means Nadal has gone above juice, and if he gets another point...
He wins the game.
He wins.
He wins the game. Golf. Always thought golf was a bit silly, to be honest. But let's look at some golf vocabulary.
Oh, be careful what you say. I'm not a fan myself, but
like
it's
golf?
Hugely popular in Ireland.
Oh, but it's boring. It's so boring.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's boring too, yeah.
I think someone said, I think it was Oscar Wilde, said that golf is a good walk spoiled.
Uh-huh. God.
A good walk spoiled.
I can see his point, but if you weren't going to have a walk... But the golf made you have the walk, then, you know, it's a bit of exercise.
That's true. That's true. That's spoiled, by the way, estropeado. Where's golf played?
Extremely popular in Ireland. Of course, the home of golf is Scotland.
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, you mean, what do you call the specified area?
Let me rephrase the question.
Okay.
Is golf played on a pitch?
No, sorry. It's a golf course.
A golf course. Yeah.
I forgot to mention golf, of course, is extremely popular in the United States as well.
That's right.
And other countries.
The American Open. Mm-hmm. And in the ball in golf is not hit with a racket. It's not hit with a club. It's hit with a...
It is hit with a club.
I'm sorry. It's, let me cut, edit. And in golf, of course, the ball is not hit with a racket. It's not hit with a bat. It's hit with a...
club.
With a golf club. Yes. Uh-huh. And you swing the club to hit the ball.
Uh-huh. Can I say something out of national pride? Orgullo nacional?
You're going to tell me that Ireland's had a golf world champion or something?
Well, more than that. I'm from Northern Ireland, specifically. Or you can say Ireland if you like, I don't mind. In Northern Ireland, there are about 1.5 million people.
Mm-hmm.
At one stage, for a brief period, about 4 or 5 years ago, we had the top 3 golf players in the world, which is just outrageously...
Really? I didn't know that.
Which is just statistically almost impossible.
Do you remember their names?
Of course I do. Rory McIlroy, who people will know. Graham McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
And Darren Clark.
Well, I have to say...
They were the top 3 seeds, is the expression.
Seeds.
Seeds.
Semillas.
But it doesn't mean that, does it? In tennis and golf, it means your rating.
Your rating.
At one stage, Northern Ireland had the top 3 seeds in the world. And as I said, golf is very popular in the United States, etc. But we had the top 3 out of 1.5 million people. That seems very improbable.
That's, yeah, considering the population size of Ireland, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Although I must confess, I must say that I've never heard of any of them.
Well, people who know about golf, they've certainly heard of Rory McIlroy.
I'm not a big
and
golf.
Probably Graham McDowell. Perhaps not Darren Clark so much.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not a big golf fan. Although, boxing is one of my favourite sports. Mm-hmm. So where does boxing happen?
A ring.
A boxing ring.
Uh-huh. What else happens in a ring?
Wrestling? Ice skating happens in a rink.
With that's with R-I-N-K. A K.
R-I-N-K, an ice skating rink.
Which would be pista.
Pista de hielo?
Yeah.
But a ring, I can't think
Wrestling.
Of. Wrestling, of course.
Yeah, which is kind of similar to boxing, but yes. you don't punch, you do other things. Punch is dar un puñetazo.
Puñetazo, to punch someone.
Yeah. You don't punch in wrestling. You grab, hold, coger, agarrar,
throw,
tirar.
Yeah.
But you don't punch. You're not allowed to punch in wrestling.
And, of course, other martial arts like karate, kickboxing, freestyle.
Kickboxing
fighting.
Happens in a ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thai boxing.
Uh-huh.
Those kind of sports. Finally, athletics. Where does athletics take place? Take place means to happen.
Well, there are track and field events.
That's right.
So some happen on a track,
mm-hmm.
running, hurdling, which is jumping over hurdles.
Hurdles.
While you run. And then some are field, for example, the javelin.
High jump,
yeah.
Long jump.
They happen in the middle. So the track goes around the field in the middle.
Do you like watching athletics?
Some. When it's the Olympic Games and things like that, when it's important, yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you?
No, not a big fan. I like watching some of the Eastern European female gymnasts.
Mm-hmm.
But
why is that?
Well, they're very attractive.
Ah.
But that's another story. Moving on, shall we speak a little about idioms, Ereza?
Okay. What is an idiom?
Well, that's a good question. What is an idiom? I have...
Is it Spanish idioma?
Idioma is language.
Yeah, let's stamp out that fallacy.
Let's eliminate,
now.
Eliminate
Not
that.
Idioma.
No direct translation of idiom to idioma. No, doesn't work. An idiom, according to my definition, a combination of words that has a figurative meaning because of its common usage. An idiom's figurative meaning is separate from the literal meaning. So if you have a literal meaning, which is literalmente lo que significa, el idiom se cambia un poquito para describir otra cosa. No sé si me explico.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Okay? Yeah. When I explain it to my students, I say it's an expression when the words have a meaning which is not their normal meaning.
Not their normal literal meaning.
Yeah.
So, for example, the idiom "it's raining cats and dogs." You're not going to walk outside in the street and see animals falling from the sky. You're not going to see cats and dogs falling on your head, but it means figuratively that it's raining a lot.
Yeah.
By the way, we don't normally say it's raining. Have you ever said it's raining cats and dogs outside?
No, I think that's now very old-fashioned. Not many native speakers say it.
I've never said it.
It's the type of thing that foreigners say because they've learned it and they think it sounds
and
nice.
And they think it's funny. Yeah.
But we don't say it much now.
Have you got any examples for us of other idioms that are more common, more used?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my favourites is to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Can you explain where that one comes from?
Tirar el bebé con el agua del baño.
Aha. But of course, that isn't the real meaning of it. What does it really mean?
How's your German? Because I have here that it comes from a German proverb. Proverbio alemana.
Okay.
I don't know. Can you say this? Das Kind mit dem Bade ausschütten? Ausschütten?
Keine Ahnung. I have no idea.
Anyway, first used in 1512, a very old idiom, which means to get rid of the good parts, deshacerse de los buenos partes, as well as the bad parts of something, igual como los malos partes, when you're trying to improve it. So you throw away everything. You throw away the good things, you throw away the bad things, by trying to improve it. So it's quite a negative idiom, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a criticism. Yeah.
Can you think of any examples when you might use it?
Yes. For example, when the government reforms something like the education system because there are problems.
Like they're trying to do in the UK right now with...
Yeah, exactly. So they might make some changes which improve the situation as regards those problems. But some of the good things that the old system had disappeared. Mm-hmm. So they've thrown out the baby with the bathwater. They've cleaned the baby, so to speak. The baby's clean now, you know. And now there's dirty bathwater. And now everything, the dirty bathwater and the baby, are going down the plug hole.
Down the plug hole is...
So the problems are disappearing, but the baby, the good things, are also disappearing.
to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, the government in the UK are not doing a very good job with the education system right now.
Michael Gove, isn't it, the minister who's making all these controversial changes.
I've yet to meet a single British teacher who likes him. I haven't met any.
I'm pleased I'm not working in the British educational system. Very pleased, very happy. Any others?
In for a penny, in for a pound.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish... easy to find an equivalent. Perdidos al río.
Perdidos al río. Lost in the river.
But of course we don't say it in English.
We don't say lost in the river. In for a penny,
in for a pound. It's like, if I have to pay a penny, tengo que pagar un penique, bah, I'll pay a pound. Pagaré una libra. Oh, por qué no?
So does that mean that if you have to pay for something, it's better to get good quality?
Well, no, it's nothing to do with paying necessarily. It's just that if you have to make some kind of effort or you're going to do something like pay a penny, for example.
Right.
Why not go much further? Why not pay a pound? So whatever you're doing, if you started it, don't do it timidly.
Mm-hmm.
Do it with extravagance.
Could you also say to go the whole hog? Is that similar?
It's pretty much the same as that. To go
hog,
the whole
hog is cerdo.
Yeah.
To go the whole hog.
Yeah. Mm. Which means, you know, I imagine that comes from eating pigs, eating hogs, when, you know, people were cooking a whole pig, a whole hog on the fire, and you'd eaten half of it and you thought, bah, why not eat all of it? I started, so I'll go on. Go the whole hog.
So if I, for example, my computer's getting old now and it's causing me problems. It's 4 or 5 years old and I think I need a new hard drive, disco duro. Mm-hmm. So I could buy a new hard drive maybe and put it in the old computer. But I'll just buy a new computer. Yeah. I'll go the whole hog, in for a penny, in for a pound, and I'll get a completely new computer.
Another one I like, another expression, is to describe a person, a big girl's blouse. If you were to translate that literally, listeners, but don't. La blusa de una chicona. De una chica grande. Now, obviously,
chica,
a person...
Chica grande is chicona? No sabía. Chica grande?
I think so, yeah. Chicona.
Is that
chica
polite
grande.
Or is that offensive?
No, it's just kind of funny. Oh,
okay.
Kind of funny, you know. Chicona, chica grande. Uh-huh. So, obviously, a person cannot be the blouse. La blusa.
La blusa.
De una chica grande. It's to describe a man or a boy. It's not to describe a woman who is soft. Es blando. Blando. He's weak. He's soft. He's being frightened when he shouldn't be.
You mean the kind of person who would walk into a pub in Northern Ireland and ask for a non-alcoholic beer?
Yes, you'd be called immediately a big girl's blouse.
Yeah, big girl's blouse.
It would be considered, you know, unmanly. No,
no eres hombre. Si bebes cerveza sin alcohol, no eres hombre. Yeah,
you're a big girl's blouse. Or another one, you're a pansy.
A pansy.
A pansy is a flower.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it means the same as big girl's blouse. It's for a man, usually, who's acting like a little girl. He's like a flower. He's very pretty, very nice, but he's not much of a man.
No.
He's a pansy. I think the Spanish is peona. Flower.
Interesting.
A pansy.
Interesting. Going back to your idiom about the hog, go the whole hog. I have an idiom with a pig. Mm-hmm. A pig with lipstick is still a pig. Mm-hmm. Lipstick is pintalabios. In Spanish, perhaps you'd say, aunque la mona se vista de seda, mona se queda. So mona is...
mona is cute.
Cute. Mona se queda. Yeah. So you try to make something more attractive than it is. For example, you buy a really cheap car, a really, really cheap Fiat or an Opel or a really, really cheap car, and you put a fantastic expensive stereo, you put really expensive covers for the seat, you put lights, you paint it a special color, you make it look like a really expensive car, but it's still a cheap car. The engine's still cheap. So a pig with lipstick is still a pig. And I have one more, finally, to be as high as a kite.
Mm-hmm.
So kite is una cometa. So, if you are as high as a kite, you're stoned.
Stoned.
Colgado. Colgada. Stoned on alcohol, stoned on drugs, after drinking all that whiskey, Reza was as high as a kite. For example.
Just an example.
He's as high as a kite, or she's as high as a kite, completely stoned. Or you could say out of it. Fuera de la realidad. Completely out of it. That's all we have time for, unfortunately.
Well, we have to go.
We have to go.
To Nemos Kier.
We must go, unfortunately. So please remember to send us an email or a sound file, un mensaje de voz en MP3, if you want to make a comment or if you have a question. Ask us. Send us an email to Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at inglespodcast.com or to Reza at belfastreza@gmail.com. Y si tenéis 10 segundos, we would really appreciate it if you gave us some stars on iTunes and maybe wrote a short review or your opinion of our podcast. And we'd like to give credit to our music in this podcast. It's by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. And it's licensed by Creative Commons under a by NC license at ccmixter.org. So from Reza and me, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Ciao.
Ciao.